Shalom Yehudim, Shalom Lebnei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Tespa Sivan, Parashas Baha'aloscha, Tashinayim Vav, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 16 June 2016, webcasting from the State of Israel, still mourning. Here's an interesting fact. Yesterday in the Knesset, after 6 years of negotiations in the Constitution, Law, and Justice Committee, and never mind that Israel has no constitution, a new law was passed covering the government's responses to terrorism, which, according to J-Post this morning, creates a new catalog of offenses to match up with the modern challenges of terrorism. According to Mistress of Justice Ayelet Shaked, she said that, quote, terrorist attacks in Orlando and Tel Aviv show that more than ever terrorism can't be tolerated, allowed. This bill cancels, and this is the interesting fact here, 60 British mandatory emergency statutes and is built on Israel's experience in fighting terrorism. Committee Chairman Nissan Slomianski of Habayat Yehudi, the Jewish Home Party, said, quote, the law that passed today in the plenum shows how to fight terrorism uncompromisingly while protecting human rights, close quote. In contrast, the delusional and forever sneering MK leftist, Zahava Gaalon, head of the Meretz Party, parried, quote, whoever tries to use terrorism in Paris or Orlando to act like all terrorism is a result of radical Islam is trying to remove responsibility for 49 years of occupation, the fuel and motivation of terror. She called the new law racist and totalitarian, close quote. Well, first of all, I found that number of 60 laws an eye-opener. After 68 years of apparent independence, Israel has continued to use British mandatory law, and I know still uses Jordanian law and even Turkish law when it suits the politicians. The Israeli legal system is a chulent, a mulligan stew of laws that Israel has never changed because Israel has yet to settle on an identity, which lack was exemplified in the over-the-top comment by Zahava Gaalon as a representative of the two large leftist sector in Israel that agrees with world anti-Jewry that Zionism is a form of racism. This is what this Meretz MK was saying. Any law that draws a line between the Jewish nation and other nations gets their backup. Any assertion of Jewish national separateness has them and world anti-Jewry squealing racism, as she does here. And as for a separate, unified Jewish ethos, that is totalitarianism in her mind. For millennia, Goyim, non-Jewish nations, have snarled at Israel and drawn blood following similar accusations. Jews are cliquish and clannish. They are tribal. Reform Jews and other alienated Jews commonly describe connections to the Jewish people as to the tribe. But we're not a tribe. We overcame our tribalism at Mount Sinai a long time ago. As Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher, came to the end of his days, he appointed his older brother, Aaron, the greatest older brother in history, to be the high priest of the people, but chose Joshua, as the political leader, who was from the tribe of Ephraim. So maybe now Israel has taken a positive step toward a more robust and solidified national ethos by shedding these laws that came from the Brits and the Turks, Arabs under Jordanian law, that we have perpetuated all these years, and in no small measure because of the shaky identity of Israelis, some of them torn between the national religious identity of their forebears, whose religion and culture bestowed upon them the right to an independent state here, versus the chronic drive of too many Jews in every generation to see in de-Judaizing the road to peace and salvation. The Hellenists thought that way, and the Maccabees put a stop to it. The left thinks that if we were nicer and more generous to the Arabs in Judea and Samaria, they would be nicer to us. And never mind history, never mind our experience, that has proven again and again this not to be true. For example, for decades Israel refused to recognize the PLO as a legitimate political entity with legitimate rights that Israel had to respect. It took almost 20 years for Israel to do that, to shake Arafat's hand on the White House lawn in 1993, and did so thinking there would be gratitude on the other side for this change of heart. But it never came. It's been 23 years now, and the PA has never educated its school children to want peace with Israel. The maps in its schoolrooms don't show Israel. Jaffa is Palestine and Haifa is Palestine. In 1994, when the PA was given rule in Area A, we thought this would please them. But then in 2000, they launched from their positions in Area A the Second Intifada. That took the lives of 1,000 to 2,000 Jews, with thousands more wounded, maimed, and mutilated for life. Israel evacuated Gaza in 2005, leaving behind an agricultural industry, greenhouses, thinking that the people in Gaza would be grateful and stop hating us so much, but that never happened. What did happen was their violence and a necessary series of three major military incursions since then, like the 50 Days of Terror in 2014 that cost the National Treasury hundreds of millions of dollars. And after 2005, the Arabs continued to shell and rocket Sderot and wreck Jewish lives. Anyone who thinks a withdrawal from Judea and Samaria would end differently is insane, according to Albert Einstein's definition. And because psychologists who study intelligence say that one of its components for high intelligence is the ability to learn from past mistakes. So the top news today in Israel, in the MSM, was the anonymous prediction by a major player in the defense industry of this country, who told the media that another war over Gaza is inevitable, and this time it will be the last war because this time Israel put an end to Hamas. I hope so. But also hope this prediction does not include, as Lieberman has long wanted, a return to IDF rule in Gaza. I think that would be another form of insanity. And what I think we have to do is cut all ties with Gaza, electricity, water, but do it over time, be humane about it, not catastrophically. The world should be told that we are under no obligation, moral obligation, to provide water and electricity to people who rocket projectiles into our streets and homes, who dig tunnels in hopes of bursting into a kindergarten of Jewish children and killing them all, God forbid. We should announce a timeline, say 5 years. And if in that time the Arab League states and Islamic Conference states and European Union states want to pitch in with some cash and build new electricity and water facilities in Gaza, Israel won't mind. But for sure, in say 5 years, Israel will turn off the lights. In a separate story at the annual Herzliya Conference, the head of IDF intelligence, Herzi Halevi, foresaw the next war with Hezbollah that will turn Lebanon into one large country of refugee sprawl, he intimated. He said no army in history ever knew as much about an enemy as Israel knows about Hezbollah. He reported that in Syria, weapons factories are turning out weapons for Hezbollah that have nothing to do with the current fighting in Syria, fighting in support of Assad, but for future use against us. We also know from the public prints of evacuation exercises the IDF is running in the north for the Jewish communities there that border Lebanon. And here was head of military intelligence Halevi saying that in the next round, the home front here is going to suffer big time, more than in 2006. But, he says, we will be able to rebuild, Hezbollah will not. In other words, as the IDF foresees demolishing Hamas in the south, so it will demolish Hezbollah in the north. Interesting, too, here is the contrast with the previous news item of the terrorism legislation that Zahava Galon sneered at. Remember, she says, whoever tries to use terrorism in Paris or Orlando to act like all terrorism is a result of radical Islam is trying to remove responsibility for 49 years of occupation, fuel and motivation of error. Sometimes I think that leftists like her are often puppets, slaves of their own fear, which brings on this denial as a form of psychological self-defense. This woman must see the hostility directed at Israel by the Arabs in Judea and Samaria as a function of Israel's abusive reign since 1967. That's a comforting thought in her mind because it allows for Israel someday waking up, come stop abusing them, and they'll stop hating us. We are in control in this scenario. And that's a comforting thought. In her mental landscape, what transpired before 1967 doesn't exist, has been deleted from her memory bank, like Hillary Clinton's emails from her servers. If the occupation is the reason for the hostility, Why were they hostile to us before 1967? It is ironic that in the newspapers today we read of the idea of planning self-defense against Hamas, the Sunni Muslim Brotherhood in disguise in the south, and Hezbollah in the north, the Party of God, sponsored by the demented anti-Semitic Shiite priests in Tehran. The IDF is telling us who our biggest threats are, belligerent Muslims north and south, who shamelessly declare we have no right to be free of their domination. But leftists, for their own psychological equilibrium, people like Galon, have to believe Israel is guilty of making them hate us, and it's all about the occupation since 1967. Before the occupation, the Arabs loved us, right? It was their pre-67 murderous hatred that brought on that war and what she calls the occupation.
Shama be'are Yehuda uvechutzot Yerushalayim kol simcha. Mehera, 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 mehera. Odi shama be'are Yehuda uvechutzot Yerushalayim kol simcha. Shama be'are Yehuda ubechutzot Yerushalayim. Odi shama be'are Yehuda ubechutzot Yerushalayim. Kol sason, kol simcha, kol hadam, kol Odi shama be'are Yehuda uvechutzot Yerushalayim kol simcha. Mehera, 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 mehera. Odi shama be'are Yehuda uvechutzot Yerushalayim. Odi shama be'are Yehuda ubechutzot Yerushalayim kol sason kol simcha kol hadam kol kala.
Let's see, since the last webcast, a major story has been Obama's hissy fit in response to being goaded into saying radical Islam, and no less Donald Trump's remarks that were touched on last webcast on Monday. Commentator Ben Shapiro, I think in the National Review, crossed the line in his response by saying outright that Trump was insinuating Obama was a traitor. Shapiro, I think, got that wrong, I think, in seeing Obama as a leftist, as he does, and not a Muslim, is a major blunder on his part. Of course, Obama struck back at Trump's renewed call for restrictive immigration on Muslims. Obama said Trump represents a national security threat. And I say, as usual with these Muslims, more psychological projection. It is Obama who refuses to seal borders and has imported almost 1 million Muslims who is the national security threat. Obama on Tuesday accused Trump of, in his remarks on Monday, introducing the prospect of religious tests that fundamentally undermine American values as enshrined in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We've gone through moments before, he said, when we've acted out of fear and we came to regret it. If we ever abandoned those values, we would not only make it a lot easier to radicalize people here and around the world, but we would have betrayed the very things we are trying to protect. The pluralism and the openness, our rule of law, our civil liberties, the very things that make our country great, the very things that make us exceptional, close quote. I heard that, I watched that, and I wanted to puke. This guy's less than sparkling intellect aside, he's a race hustler. He here is claiming exceptionalism when he ran in 2008 on the belief that America is not exceptional. What, is he a liar? Yes, he's a liar. He has no fidelity to his own words. His appeal to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights here and religious tests is simply ridiculous. It's out of context. Foreign nationals living in a state or states overseas that finances and preaches terror atrocities against the United States are simply not entitled to the protections of the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They're not American citizens. The Constitution did not assert dominion over all other nations. If the Congress of the United States and the President want to deny easy access to Muslims on the basis of their religion, that is, to use a religious test against them, that would be perfectly legal. It has no connection to no religious tests for American citizens applying for government jobs, whatever. Here Obama is like Zahava Gallon in his taboo against disliking Islam, accusing its theory and practice of being unacceptable in the Judeo-Christian West. He doesn't like that. One of the great stumbling blocks to a smarter and wiser approach to Islamic atrocities is this political correctness of seeing Islam just like other religions. It's not. In Obama's universe, every terrorist act by Muslims is pronounced unrepresentative of the religion, which he has no right to do. He has no authority to say such a thing. If the recognized authorities of Islam do not condemn Orlando, Paris, Brussels, Tel Aviv, etc., who is Obama to issue his fatwa that these homicidal maniacs, like this demon in Orlando, are unrepresentative of Islam? And then we have these Republican politicians, heavy-duty anti-Obamaites like Paul Ryan and Lindsey Graham still were shocked by Trump's implicit allegations about Islam. Graham said, Mr. Trump seems to be suggesting that the president is one of them, meaning the terrorist. Mr. Trump's reaction is to declare war on the faith, and that's the worst possible reaction. Paul Ryan piped up that Trump's ban on Muslims is not reflective of our principles as a country. I don't think either Ryan or Graham, like too many Americans and Europeans and Israelis, allow themselves to see Islam for what it really is, a totalitarian empire that brooks no opposition in belief, thought, or deed. People don't realize just how awful Islam is. It's not like Judaism, like Christianity, like Buddhism, like Taoism, Baha'ism. None preach violent conquest of non-believers. None preach the murder of infidels. Obama's remarks make me sick. With his lack of intellectual integrity, he sings the praises of America's pluralism and openness, rule of law, and civil liberties when Islam practices none of these values. How dare he call on these American values to defend an Islam that does not share them and even hates America for them? Is hypocrisy the right word here? Shameless dishonesty? Would also be good. Obama indignantly denounced language that singles out immigrants and suggests entire religious communities are complicit in violence, close quote. But of course they're complicit, because their spokesmen, the spokesmen of this religious community, Islam, say nothing against these horrors. versus, for example, when Baruch Goldstein here took the law into his own hands and massacred almost 30 Muslims in Hebron 22 years ago, the Knesset of Israel met in special session, and the prime minister of the country denounced Goldstein in the name of the government and the people of Israel. But where, oh where, are the Muslim leaders denouncing Orlando and Paris and Brussels and Tel Aviv? Obama objects to this collective antipathy to Islam. They bring it on themselves.
ים של שקרים התפזרו לכל כיוון או שזה שקר אחד גדול שהתפוצץ חיוכים מתוך סיוטים של אנשים נערמו עם שברי הזכוכיות וגם מילים שדוברו גבוהה גבוהה מילים של פנסים של הרים ושל גבעות עד מזכוכית מתוך ידו של הגורל והתנפץ הנחשים זחלו על הרצפה או שזה נחש גדול בודד שהתרוצץ כאבים מתוך שלבה של אנשים נערמו עם שברי אותיות מתוך שמות של אנשים נזרקו אל תוך החלל הריק הזה ודמיונות שכוונו גבוהה גבוהה דמיונות של איזה מחזאי הוזה כן ככה זה בחיים כנראה שככה זה
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Well, after this webcast, I encourage one and all to avail themselves of the posted link. If you want to understand the demons that drove that Muslim in Orlando to his satanic orgy of blood, it's the best piece, and it was written 9 years ago. It's by Jamie Glazoff. in the front page magazine on the role of homosexuality in belligerent Islam. The title of the piece was Boys of the Taliban and was written 3 years before a video documentary on the phenomenon was shown on PBS in 2010 called The Dancing Boys of Afghanistan. One of the sickest and most sickening things I've ever seen. The practice in Afghanistan is of men, fathers, handing over their young sons, boys, to the big shops in the community. It's a prestige thing to do, to allow them to become the boy toy for the big shot, to be raped whenever the big shot wants to. This is an act of great prestige in this community. These boys are put in girls' dresses and made to dance before these men. Though in truth, I was not totally surprised, because in my research on the misnamed Barbary pirates at the end of the 19th century, I discovered pretty much the same phenomenon. The port cities of Algiers, Tunis, and Tripoli were tributaries to the Ottoman Empire, meaning they paid tribute each year and were ruled by Janissaries, loyal to Constantinople, a military caste of Turks who were commonly, as children, Christian boys kidnapped in the Balkans, converted in an instant and turned into boy toys for these Turks, these soldiers, who then went out as tributaries to rule these towns. They would be seen in public with a boy at their sides, dressed in the finest silks, whom everyone knew was his boy toy. There was no shame in this. So if you want to understand the psychopathy at work in the mind of that Muslim last Sunday in Orlando, read this remarkable piece on homosexuality in Islam, which is as rampant as it is officially taboo. It is one more piece of the puzzle that yours truly uses to judge the Arabs and the religion they fabricated and the perverse sexual universe it reflects. The polygamy, the mutilation of women who are experienced as dangerous predators. Glazov goes into the humiliation of boys in Islam via this belief, these practices. They're commonly violated, and then in turn, as they grow up, violate others. They become like this character in Orlando, a walking pressure cooker, always ready to explode, constantly enraged, and he finally did, this poor devil, tormented and twisted up inside about his own addiction to this vice. It was spooky today to read this 7-year-old piece on the crippled emotional lives of Muslim males like him. It was as if he was talking about this very guy in Orlando. The pathological sex lives of these Muslims are dynamic precursors to their violence, their rage, their hatred. They carry this rage with them from their boyhoods into adulthood. They are walking ammunition dumps of bitterness, humiliation, and rage. It's all a package deal. And yours truly traces the dysfunction in this culture all the way back to Ham, whom two of our greatest rabbis, 1,500 years ago, living in today's Iraq, accused Ham, they accused, of monstrous sex crimes because they likely saw them all around them among the Gentiles in Mesopotamia in the 5th century. Ham violated his father's dignity and is cursed that his seed will be a slave of slaves, and surely that demoniac in Orlando was a slave of his titanic emotions that he had no control over. His own addiction enslaved him to a behavior his religion officially rejects. And in this Glazov piece, there's a fine description of the route to suicide many of these Muslims embark upon, for only will bring them relief. Islam is one screwed up culture. As Barack Hussein Obama, abandoned by his father, is one screwed up man. From his first inaugural speech onward, his greatest project has been selling Islam to Americans and inserting Islam into the culture in the hope it will surpass Judaism in the hearts of Christians. That was his language in that first speech. He saw America as a country of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, in that order. And in the next sentence went on to promise a new relationship with Islam. Then in Cairo, a few months later, that spring, in Al-Azhar, he spread the fantasy of an Islam that had been part of American life since the beginning. In effect, what he was doing was what Muhammad did to Judaism. Muhammad declared the Jewish heritage his. Islam now ruled the roost on the Temple Mount. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were proclaimed Muslims. David was a Muslim. Solomon was a Muslim. Islam claims the Jewish past is the Muslim past now. And here was Obama in Cairo addressing fans of Hamas and telling them, America belongs to you too. So, of course, this week Obama became more emotional and agitated in public than we have seen him since he took office. His anger was not over the massacre of innocents in that nightclub in Florida, but the dislike of Islam implicit in Trump's views. That's what lit his fuse. Not the massacre, but the rejection of Islam that has been at the center of his presidency from day one.
ההולכים בתורת השם אשרי תמימי דרך ההולכים בתורת השם דע כי על ידי התורה מתקבלים כל התפילות וכל הבקשות שאנו מבקשים מתפללים ואכן והחשיבות של ישראל נתעלה ונתרומם בפני כל מי שצריכים ברוחני בגשמי אשרי תמימי דרך ההולכים בתורת השם אשרי תמימי דרך ההולכים בתורת השם עכשיו בעוונותינו הרבים חן וחשיבות האמיתי של ישראל נפל כי עכשיו עיקר החן והחשיבות הוא אצלם אבל על ידי התורה נתעלה אכן מהחשיבות של ישראל כי התורה נקראת איילת אהבים ויערתכם שמעלכם על עומדיה ועל ידי זה מתקבלים כל התפילות והבקשות אשרי תמימי דרך ההולכים בתורת השם אשרי תמימי דרך ההולכים בתורת השם.
Okay, so check out that link with its vivisection of the sick male Muslim mind. spookily relevant, this 9-year-old piece. That's it for this evening and the week. Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Me'aretz Yisrael.